Hello and welcome to another night of Blue Cirrus Telehealth Radio. I'm Michelle Hager, Managing Partner of Blue Cirrus Consulting in South Carolina. And tonight, our guest is Jim Stritzinger. He's the director of the South Carolina Broadband Office, which is contained in the Office of Regulatory Staff in South Carolina. I'm excited to have him today. He's had some really big successes around broadband, and we always talk about healthcare and telehealth on this show. And one of the things that Jim's been doing for a while in the state of South Carolina, which is 90% rural, if you aren't aware of that, among other states have high rurality. He's been looking at rural broadband access, and of course, that's come to the forefront through COVID. Now that we know that not only healthcare is limited when we have limited broadband, but we also have limitations in education as well. And part of that, and I know Jim's going to talk about this, which I'm excited about, is the infrastructure bill that was signed by the current administration has some dollars associated with broadband access and how that's going to effectively change the way that broadband is brought to folks within the current within the United States as a whole, but today we'll talk specifically about South Carolina. So I think there's some really good practical information for folks. So Jim, thanks so much for being on the show tonight.
Michelle, it's great to be with you.
Thank you so much. Tell us a little bit about the organization that you represent and the community that you serve.
Sure thing. Well, first of all, my role is the director of the broadband office, and I'm part of a state agency, but kind of the fun thing for me, or one of the fun things for me, is the broadband office is really a startup inside state government. A lot of people have to remember that most states did not have, very few had broadband offices prior to the pandemic. So, COVID really, brought home the importance of broadband to all of our communities. It unified the South Carolina General Assembly around the topic. I know, I have a pretty strong feeling it unified the Massachusetts Broadband General Assembly
Yes.
as well. And so but it's been, really, I joke with our agency director, it was really a battlefield promotion. Nobody knew it was going to come to you. And all of a sudden it came and came full force. So, as an example, the state of South Carolina had never invested any money in broadband prior to the summer of 2020. And it really took June 24th, 2020, to be exact, is when the state invested its first penny. And the Office of Regulatory Staff, because of our work with telecommunications auditing and compliance around the Universal Service Fund, really got tapped to take the lead role. But you think about it, kids were struggling to do their homework. Moms and dads were terrified, impossible to do telehealth in the middle of the pandemic. And it was really an urgent call to action, and we really had to make some things happen. So we had three big things to do during, in the start of the pandemic. One was to begin developing some broadband maps for the state, which had never existed before. We were tasked instantly to hand out, we call them MiFi devices, those little portable devices where a laptop can connect to infrastructure. And the third thing was the first ever state investments in actual broadband infrastructure to the tune of $30 million. So a lot happened all at once, and it was kind of this ready, set, go moment, and it hasn't stopped since.
Well, you're right. And I recall before the pandemic, Jim, you had some significant work that you were doing. As you said, there were no dollars associated with broadband expansion in the state prior to that June 24th date that you mentioned. But I recall you working on, getting water towers and utilizing old water towers or other tall structures in the area just to try to sort of piecemeal broadband or some kind of connections across the state of South Carolina. And that was some years ago that you've been working on that.
Yeah. Well, the healthcare community was really the first to realize, I think, the magnitude of the need in broadband. And you know, there's a lot of pilot projects. Michelle, I know you guys were involved in a lot of things to send telehealth devices out to the family home. A lot of great ideas for home-based healthcare. And a lot of those projects were falling apart because of the fact that, you know, the reports back were, well, this home doesn't have internet, or that home doesn't have internet. So I, you know, here in South Carolina, a group called Palmetto Care Connections, together with the Hospital Association, and also the South Carolina Office on Rural Health, they all came to me and said, Jim, you know, could you do a map for us kind of showing where we have broadband and where we don't? And yeah, that's, for me, that started in calendar year 2019. Prior to that, I had been working for a nonprofit and really trying to help, you know, the affordability side of broadband. So I've been working in this space for a long time, but, you know, my background's an electrical engineer.
Yeah.
And obviously I've just been really frustrated because, you know, you go through, you do a lot of these studies and everything came to the point where we just need a lot of money. You know, there's no amount of arm waving that would solve the problem. You needed the right financial resources to make investments and actually build broadband. And it's really, really expensive. So that, yeah, we were fortunate. You know, I came to the Office of Regulatory Staff in March of 2021, but was really fortunate that I'd been doing this for a long time and could bring the work, you know, the history of my work with me to the agency. And we were able to hit the ground running.
It's been amazing work. And I think this map that you're referencing is really important for people to understand, because I think everyone day to day thinks that, well, don't we already have broadband coverage across the United States? I mean, we are a first world country, you know, high level internet services across the country. We obviously develop a ton of different technologies. And of course, when we go into a cell phone service provider, the entire map is green or red or whatever their marketing is around. We have full coverage across the entire, you know, area. But the realities are completely different. And talk about those challenges. I know this sort of last mile, we've talked a little bit about this on the show before, but you're the expert. Tell us about those types of challenges.
So, Michelle, I'll play a little game and we'll pretend it's your personal money.
Yep.
And we, you know, if I told you that it costs about $80,000 a mile to build fiber optic cable, and your return on investment's only going to be about between $50 and $100 for a residential home in terms of their monthly spend, you can see very quickly that when you get into the rural areas, lower density, right, lower homes per mile, you might have to build 5 or 6 miles of fiber to reach a single home. And the economics, the business case for building broadband into rural America just doesn't make sense. But of course, this is the classic good work that government does. You know, government can inject money into equations to change the calculus. And that's what being a broadband office is all about. You know, I think it's useful to understand the role of the broadband office. We don't hook up a single home. We don't build a single mile of fiber. Our job is to make investments into legitimate, eligible internet service providers. So we're like a big private equity investor, and we're required to stand up a competitive grant program, you know, make it open and available to all.
Yeah.
Take all comers, but we make investments, and the private companies also have to put some match into it. We don't fund the whole project. You know, when we first got started, the projects were 50-50 match. And as we get into more rural communities, it takes, you know, a larger investment from the state's perspective. You know, the matches might become 70-30 or 80-20 to make those projects work. But it's just really expensive. And, you know, there's really two methods for putting fiber out. Is one is you can attach to telephone poles, and that's very common in rural communities. And the other thing is to do a buried installation. And the buried installations are more expensive. However, they're more resilient to things like hurricanes and flooding and things like that. But they cost a lot more. And, you know, we can do it a lot quicker on telephone poles. So all of these dynamics come into play, and it's really a fascinating topic.
Right. It is. It is. And it's really making a difference in the lives of people in South Carolina and across the country. What efforts do you see? What are the differences that you see every day in your work? But also, what efforts are the FCC making in order to make sure that broadband coverage is across the country?
Yeah, well, the federal government is playing a huge role in providing dollars to the equation. So, you know, what a lot of people don't know is the Federal Communications Commission and also the U.S. Department of Agriculture have been investors in broadband for quite a while. And in fact, they were the only ones that were doing it for really prior to 2020. And then most recently, President Biden on November 21st signed what's known as the Infrastructure Investment Jobs Act, or IIJA. And that allocated $65 billion more dollars to the broadband world. And it's available for all 50 states and U.S. territories. So that money is flowing through a federal agency that's known as NTIA, which is part of U.S. Department of Commerce. And we work with NTIA quite literally on every other day basis. And it's really been fascinating. My little office, which I told you, honestly, that the South Carolina Broadband Office did not exist until July 1st of 2021. I was the only employee at the time. Now we have six. And believe it or not, we're now responsible with the cumulative impact of IIJA and other things of over $1 billion of money. So it's a huge responsibility. But it's a really fascinating time. It's a special time in American history.
It is. It is. And we're fortunate to have Representative Clyburn on our in our state that helped to make that happen. And obviously was a big supporter of the broadband activity. And we'll talk a little bit about broadband, whether or not this should really be a utility or not. But I wanted to know from you, what can the public expect in South Carolina related to broadband access, given all of the efforts that your office is doing and FCC and others?
Well, I think, you know, it's, you know, I can share our approach. And one of the nice things about this massive federal program is each state has had the ability to kind of craft their own program that makes sense for them. So as an example, you know, I'm friends with the Massachusetts broadband director, Michael Baldino, and I, we compare notes and share ideas. But specific to South Carolina, our fundamental approach has been to, you know, we're a data-driven broadband office. So we remap the whole state every 6 months. And then after we get it remapped, then we make our investments. So we map and we invest and we map and we invest. So this large pot of money, we don't spend it all at once. We you know, use more of an agile methodology to approach it and take it in bite-sized chunks. And we, our approach from a construction perspective is the longest project that we allow is a two-year project. And that's another thing a lot of people don't understand. You just can't snap your fingers and make broadband happen. The investment has to occur, and then the construction work has to happen for broadband to show up in a neighborhood.
Right.
So, you know, it can take 2 years from the time we make an investment to the time the network lights up. And so patience is an important part of this. And of course, it's frustrating if you're a mom or dad or somebody to trying to do health telehealth to wait, but it just does take time. And, but we get our grants stood up, we map and we invest, we map and we invest. And by doing this, we have about 32 to 35 internet service providers in the state. And, you know, this is the classic elephant of a problem. And the way that you attack something this big is you take it one bite at a time. Mm-hmm. And, but you also try to have as many of your internet service providers working at the same time, you know, in parallel with other without stepping on each other's feet. And it's a very challenging coordination task, but we're making great progress.
Clearly, and obviously folks across the state and across other states are doing this as well. And one thing that I did want to ask you about, and I alluded to it before I was asking that question, is around this idea of broadband being really a utility in the way that electricity is, and that it's not a luxury to have this access to the internet, this access to information or access to healthcare, or access to education. And I know that there are some policy initiatives potentially around that. Obviously, with you working for a state agency, you aren't necessarily advocating in that way. But what other policy initiatives should the public be aware of and potentially advocate for?
Well, I think a couple of things. You know, one is, you know, the role of the broadband office is to stand up a competitive grant program. And in so doing, we pay careful attention to affordability. So, Michelle, we just don't pay for a network and then expect it to be affordable for residents. We actually require that on the front end. And that's a big deal. You know, the Federal Communications Commission, and I'll share this with your viewers as well, or readers, is the fact that they offer a $30 subsidy to needy families. It's called the Affordable Connectivity Program. And we try to, well, we require that all of the applicants for our grant funds are eligible to offer the ACP program. And that's a big deal. A lot of the nation's largest providers, we call them the stadium naming brands, they're now offering internet service right around $30 a month. And the reason for that is with the FCC's subsidy, you can get pretty decent quality internet in your house for, in some cases, free. So want to make sure that everybody knows about that and can take advantage if they need it. But your question about should broadband be a utility? I think about this a lot, but I'll share some, you know, maybe some inside baseball stuff with you. When you think about other utilities, for example, electric service to your house, water service to your house, sewer line to your house. If you think about that from a 40-year perspective, you know, Michelle, when's the last time the electric company came and ripped out all of your electric service and rebuilt it?
Right. You know?
The technology for delivering electricity to your family home really hasn't changed. And it's fairly stable. So once you hook a home up, you're kind of good to go. And the same is true with water and sewer. The other thing is all of those utilities are monopolies. So, you know, any given home in the United States, you only have one choice for where to get your electricity. And broadband, of course, is very different. It's an unregulated service. And I would argue that we're, you know, the nation's better off with it being unregulated. And because of the fact that, you know, when you compare the rate of technical change, broadband, you know, I think probably most of us are that at least I'm fortunate one, but I'm switching out my home internet technology equipment every couple of years because it becomes obsolete. So when you think of the rate of change, and I don't think any of the citizens of the United States want that rate of change to slow down. I think by having it competitive and a free market, that's the best way to keep the technology changing and moving quickly. It's my personal opinion, not necessarily the opinion of the agency, but I think it is a useful thing to reflect upon.
It's important. And I think you mentioned it at the top of this interview that, you know, this is exactly how government can be helpful in injecting funds into places where maybe the competition scenario isn't working in the way that we would hope it would work in the case of rural. This is when government works best. It's helping to bridge those gaps. And that helps keep the best of both worlds, right? As you said, there's some free services for folks to be able to access it. We continue to maintain competition, and we continue to expand and allow coverage across the state. So some good work.
Yeah, and it's, you know, one of the things we try to do is we've, you know, when you think about it, when you're a grantor, when you are creating the playing board, so to speak, we've used a little bit of gamification, if you've heard that term before.
Yes.
You know, and I like to tell our broadband, our internet service providers that I'm making them play Pac-Man. And it's been funny because with data, you can create really strong prioritization across the state. So we actually baked into state law, we're required to prioritize census blocks, you know, little pieces of geography where we have a lot of public K-12 students, or the area has no internet service provider at all, or it happens to be a low income census block. So I know, especially in the healthcare world, you guys are keenly familiar with, you know, U.S. Housing and Urban Development, and they're known as the difficult development areas, you know, the yes. classic geographies where, you know, the healthcare conditions are just not normal, right? They're trailing because of low income levels in the area and things like that. So what we've done with the broadband map, when we stand up a grant program, we prioritize the census blocks, just like I said. And guess what? You know, we score grants. So when a grant comes in, you know, back in the Pac-Man days, you took your Pac-Man around with the joystick and you gobbled up as many cherries as you could. And that's exactly how our grant applicants score grant points, is by doing the same thing.
That's great. They just have to avoid the ghosts, apparently, right?
That's right. Yes.
Well, this has been fascinating, Jim. I think the work of the office is been great. I specifically wanted to talk to you to learn more about, you know, what you are doing and what your office is doing to help the folks in South Carolina, but what other offices across the country, specifically Massachusetts, where we broadcast live, what is happening there as well. Is there anything else that you think we ought to make sure our listeners are aware of?
Well, I would just invite anybody that's interested in seeing the South Carolina broadband maps is to visit scdigitaldrive.org. That's where the home of all of our mapping work. I'll share again, you know, the affordable connectivity program is available nationwide, and any low income families that need some help paying their monthly bills, I definitely would recommend going there. I think in Massachusetts, again, my friend Michael Baldino would love to help you getting connected if your community needs some help. And, you know, we're all working together. We're sharing ideas. You know, the challenges that Massachusetts has versus South Carolina are different. Our geographies are different, but we have the flexibility to do what we need to do for, you know, to treat our state the right way.
That's right. Yeah. And with the high rurality that we have in this state, it's important that we do this. And we know that we saw the results of that and the lack of broadband, certainly during COVID, and that little accidental research project that we were all part of in those last couple of years. Jim, thank you so much for being part of the show today. It was great to talk to you and learn more about your work and what you're doing in South Carolina. And I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks, Michelle.
Pleasure to have you. We will be right back with Blue Cirrus Telehealth Radio.